This is not well recommended. That hurts my eyesight. The builder of the universe, who laid down for us the laws of life, provided that we should exist in well-being, but not in luxury. Everything conducive to our well-being is prepared and ready to our hands. But what luxury requires can never be got together except with wretchedness and anxiety. Let us, therefore, use this boon of nature by reckoning it among the things of high importance. Let us reflect that nature's best title to our gratitude is that whatever we want because of sheer necessity, we accept without squeamishness. Farewell. Letter 120. More about virtue. Your letter roamed over several little problems, but finally dwelt upon this alone, asking for explanation. How do we acquire a knowledge of that which is good and that which is honorable? In the opinion of other schools, these two qualities are distinct. Among our followers, however, they are merely divided. This is what I mean. Some believe the good to be that which is useful. They accordingly bestow this title upon riches, horses, wine, and shoes. So cheaply do they view the good, and to such base uses do they let it descend. They regard as honorable that which agrees with the principle of right conduct, such as taking dutiful care of an old father, relieving a friend's poverty, showing bravery on a campaign, and uttering prudent and well-balanced opinions. We, however, do make the good and the honorable two things, but we make them out of one. Only the honorable can be good. Also, the honorable is necessarily good. I hold it superfluous to add the distinction between these two qualities, inasmuch as I have mentioned it so many times. But I shall say this one thing, that we regard nothing as good which can be put to wrong use by any person. And you see for yourself to what wrong uses many men put their riches, their high position, or their physical powers. To return to the matter on which you desire information. How we first acquire the knowledge of that which is good and that which is honorable. Nature could not teach us this directly. She has given us the seeds of knowledge, but not knowledge itself. Some say that we merely happened upon this knowledge, but it is unbelievable that a vision of virtue could have presented itself to anyone by mere chance. We believe that it is inference due to observation, a comparison of events that have occurred frequently. Our school of philosophy hold that the honorable and the good have been comprehended by analogy, since the word analogy has been admitted to citizen rank by Latin scholars, I do not think that it ought to be condemned, but I do think it should be brought into the citizenship which it can justly claim. I shall, therefore, make use of the word not merely as admitted, but as established. Now, what this analogy is, I shall explain. We understood what bodily health was, and from this basis we deduced the existence of a certain mental health also. We knew, too, bodily strength, and from this basis we inferred the existence of mental sturdiness. Kindly deeds, humane deeds, brave deeds, had at times amazed us. So we began to admire them as if they were perfect. Underneath, however, there were many faults, hidden by the appearance and the brilliancy of certain conspicuous acts. To these we shut our eyes. Nature bids us amplify praiseworthy things. Everyone exalts renown beyond the truth. And thus, from such deeds, we deduced the conception of some great good. Fabricius rejected King Pyrrhus's gold, deeming it greater than a king's crown to be able to scorn a king's money. Fabricius also, when the royal physician promised to give his master poison, warned Pyrrhus to beware of a plot. The self-same man had the resolution to refuse either to be won over by gold or to win by poison. So we admired the hero, who could not be moved by the promises of the king or against the king, who held fast to a noble idea and who, is anything more difficult, was in war sinless, for he believed that wrongs could be committed even against an enemy, and in that extreme poverty which he had made his glory, shrank from receiving riches as he shrank from using poison. "Live," he cried, "O Pyrrhus, thanks to me, and rejoice, instead of grieving as you have done till now.